Good morning. It's really great to see everybody here, and we're very excited to have this opportunity to describe the work that we're doing on Fit and Strong. I'm from the University of Illinois at Chicago, and I just wanted to acknowledge the other co-investigators with me on this project, Rachel Seymour, PJ Desai, Cheryl Dernanian, and Gail Huber. And an oversight was not also listing Dick Campbell as one of the co-investigators on this. I have a lot of slides to get through in a limited amount of time, so I'm going to go kind of quickly. Here are the objectives of the talk. Basically, I want to review the background of why we designed Fit and Strong the way we did, describe the design and also the testing that we have done in terms of the evidence base for Fit and Strong. And then the main point of this talk is to review the dissemination effort that we've been engaged in most recently, and then quickly review some of the lessons that we've learned from that. So very quickly, in terms of the background, Fit and Strong basically builds on an earlier longitudinal study of 600 older adults in Chicago. And that study found that arthritis was the number one cause of disability among them. And it found some new information, which was that lower extremity joint impairment, in particular, was a risk factor for disability. It makes sense when you think about what you use your lower extremity joints for. You know, these are your large weight-bearing joints. Use them for a lot of ADL tasks, like walking, climbing stairs, getting in and out of a car, toileting, getting in and out of bed, so on and so forth. So if you have impairment in your lower extremity joints, it makes sense you're really going to be at risk for disability in these tasks. The other thing that I'm sure most of you know is the most common symptom that people with osteoarthritis complain about is pain. And what happens, unfortunately, with people who have it in their lower extremity joints is they basically stop moving around. As a result of that, they become sedentary, and then that has another whole set of second-order consequences in terms of people becoming deconditioned. And people are deconditioned both with respect to aerobic functioning, stop moving around, their cardiovascular system and lungs are not challenged the way they were before, and the muscles around those joints start to erode with respect to strength. So as a result, cross-sectional studies have shown that people with OA have poor aerobic functioning and decreased muscle strength compared to age-matched controls. So on the basis of that evidence, we basically thought that what was needed was a multiple component intervention that targeted all arthritis interventions have to target flexibility and help people warm up stiff and painful joints, but also includes strength and also aerobic conditioning. The other kind of additional thing that we added into the design was most studies up to that point when we were designing this had examined short-term impact of physical activity, and they reported 5 or 8 week outcomes. We really wanted to see if we could make a long-term impact with a short program. So we looked at the whole adherence literature, and the literature basically said, well, you have to include an education component that's geared to increasing self-efficacy. So I'm sure most of you in this room know what self-efficacy is. Essentially, it has two components. The first is confidence that you can perform a task adequately. And the second is the belief, and a lot of people don't think about the second part, the belief that if you perform it, you will achieve a personally meaningful outcome. Okay, not some outcome that your doctor has said, you know, you should achieve, but something that, you know, you haven't internalized as important to you. The adherence literature has some suggestions about how to do that. It's important to make the exercise as easy to do as possible. That's why we basically focus on things like brisk walking and using ankle cuff weights and exercise bands that are very cheap and accessible. It's also important to help participants develop individualized routines. and to provide structured reinforcement regarding their progress. And one of the things that we do is have a log. Every single class, at the end of the exercise component, people log what they have done and compare the progress that they're making. So Fritten's drawing is a little different because it combines exercise with education for lifestyle change. We believe strongly that you can't just tell people to exercise. We've had doctors telling people to exercise for a long time, and that's important, but it's not sufficient. What you really need to do is to review with each individual what exercise means to them in the context of their lives, their neighborhoods, exercise opportunities that are available, their concerns about it, and so on and so forth. So Fritten's drawing is different. It's a multiple component exercise plus education for lifestyle change. It meets 3 times a week for 8 weeks, 24 sessions total. And each session has 60 minutes of multiple component exercise followed by 30 minutes of education slash group problem solving. The other kind of unique thing about the program is that in week 6 of the program, the instructors sit down and they negotiate a contract with each participant for how that person is going to maintain physical activity after the end of Fit and Strong, because it only lasts 8 weeks. We're very concerned about what people are going to do after. So the instructor will ask them, you know, you have to do flexibility, you have to do aerobics, you have to do strength. What do you want to do? Where do you want to do it? When do you want to do it? Do you want to do it using equipment? Not. Do it at a facility? Not. With a partner? Not. And then we'll kind of probe, well, okay, what are you going to do in January in Chicago? What are you going to do in July in Chicago? And so on and so forth. So the general class schedule is 15 minutes of warm-up. Warm-up's very important for people with arthritis. 20 minutes of aerobic exercise, which is low impact or brisk walking. 20 minutes of resistance exercise and 5 minutes of cool down. We actually get people down on the floor at that point towards the further on in the maybe like week 5 and teach them how to. People are very afraid of falling and they don't know how to get up off the floor. That's one of their main concerns. Teach them how to get down on the floor safely and get back up off the floor safely. 30 minutes of education, group problem solving, and again, already went over the scheduling. So what about the evidence base for the program? The first thing we did was an efficacy study that involved a randomized controlled trial. We had pre and post test measures at baseline, 2, 6, and 12 months. And we used no treatment control group. We had 115 people in the treatment group and 110 controls. Here are the outcomes favoring the treatment group. There were no outcomes favoring the control group. And you can see at 2 months, we had 3 outcomes, improved adherence, involvement in physical activity, improved self-efficacy for exercise, and decreased lower extremity stiffness. At 6 months, we had time adherence efficacy kick in. Seems like people have to actually do it to have their confidence in that skill kick in. And then we also had impact on pain. So it seems like you have to kind of work on the stiffness to get a later diminution in pain. The good news is that we also had several of these extend out to 12 months. The other thing is that some of the effect sizes for these were quite large. 0.7 and 0.8 for the involvement in physical activity and for the self-efficacy for exercise, and those compare very favorably to effect sizes for pharmaceutical interventions. So the conclusions from that were that we had benefits at 2, 6, and 12 months. We published those findings in 2 different issues of the Gerontologist. And then we then funded by the National Institute on Aging, excuse me, to examine strategies to support long-term maintenance after physical activity, after Fit and Strong ends. So we implemented Fit and Strong across Chicago, working with the Department of Senior Services, and we were able to examine outcomes at 2, 6, 12, and go out to 18 months for the first time. We also had used this as an opportunity to transition to using certified exercise instructors. We had designed the program originally and instructed it using licensed physical therapists, because our first, in the efficacy trial, our first concern was to do no harm. But we tried it with the CEI instructors, and we've published findings in Arthritis Care and Research. The outcomes were identical. So that was the really good news. So here are the effects from the effectiveness trial. Our primary outcome was maintenance of physical activity, and you can see that we really had, especially with respect to the frequency of physical activity outcome, a very strong impact out to 18 months. And here are the secondary outcomes, and you can see again a lot of impact on lower extremity stiffness, pain, physical function, and then lower extremity strength and aerobic capacity objective measures, okay, and then also a sustained impact on depression and anxiety that were arthritis specific. So we concluded from that it was low cost, easily replicated, impacted the outcomes that we were interested in, maintained out to 18 months, and consistent across increasingly diverse participants, settings, and so on. We had many more African Americans in the effectiveness study on the south side of Chicago, and it was great to see that sustained. We're partnering now to disseminate Fit and Strong in 5 AAAs in Illinois and 5 in North Carolina. And we have been approved by CDC and the Administration on Aging as an evidence-based program that states should adopt. As a result of this dissemination efforts, we now have 2 T-trainers, 2 master trainers, 124 trained instructors across Illinois and North Carolina. 46 sites have implemented. 20 sites have maintained. We expect that number to grow because all 46, some of them are still doing their first iterations, so they can't even be eligible to be maintainers yet. And we've had about 600 additional participants in the program. Some of the things that we learned with respect to adoption is that the availability of certified exercise instructors, we thought that that would be a really terrific way of furthering the adoption. You know, there are, in rural areas, it's still a challenge. They're not available. One of the facilitators, though, is people really like the fact that it's evidence-based, they like the multiple components, and they really like the fact that it's a packaged turnkey program at this point. With respect to fidelity, we found some unacceptable adaptations when we did site visits. So it was an important opportunity to provide instructor feedback, and we used it as an opportunity also to revise our training procedures and our manuals. With respect to maintenance, instructor cost is a challenge for a lot of sites. However, if they've had good attendance, positive participant feedback, if there's strong interest among their sponsoring organization, those all help the sites to make the effort to maintain it. We found that site selection is important. The best sites so far have been healthcare systems, YMCAs, parks and recs, and large senior centers that already have done some physical activity. They know what we're talking about. It's kind of difficult for an organization that has never done it before to, you know, kind of hire the instructor and so on and so forth. We're now doing a pilot in Illinois with assisted living facilities. It's working out fine. It's important to do it with cognitively intact residents of those. And we've also discovered that there are some balance issues that we really need to be sensitive. They're a more frail population. The other thing we've discovered is that you need to have a very short time gap between the training and the implementation of the program. We want the instructors to really have all of the instruction fresh in their minds. The other thing is it's very important to require the sites to do the recruitment prior to the training. So they've got people in the pipeline and they're ready to go. That helps shorten that time gap. So our lessons learned are that we have revised the training. We now demonstrate every single exercise we have and their modifications for people with different, you know, types of disability. Instructors, we now observe them doing the exercises. We spend more time on the role playing of the health education problem solving curriculum. Fidelity checks we found have been crucial. Feedback to the instructor is a two-way street. Feedback to them and our feedback feedback to us and our feedback to them is very important. And, you know, it's important to revise the materials. I think our group probably would break out in a rash if I told them we had to revise the manual one more time. We've done it so often. Here are the participant outcomes from the dissemination. You can see we've still got the same. We're looking pre-post-test at 8 weeks, still seeing the same impact on lower extremity pain, stiffness. We added a new one, energy, fatigue, self-efficacy for exercise, marginal impact on body mass index for the first time. So that's kind of interesting. We got a couple of awards for the program. The one that we're most excited about, we're very excited about the APHA one, but we're also very excited about the one that our site, pioneering site in North Carolina, got. Current activities, we're testing the Hispanic version in Illinois and in Arizona. We're expanding the presence of the program in Illinois and North Carolina with Administration on Aging funds. And we're moving into Florida, and we're going to be training instructors in Florida in January. And of course, everybody's very upset about having to do that in January. So anyway, so that's one of the good parts of the program. And we need to greatly expand our master trainer supply, so that's next on the list. And if you would like more information, please don't hesitate to contact me. This is our interactive website. You can also use that to contact anybody on the team. Okay, so thank you.